We're back, and I'm joined by L. Andrew Warner, Rediscovering America, and it's Duluth on the waterfront. Good morning, L.
Good morning.
And thank you for joining Talking Travel today.
I'm glad to be here.
You start your article off by saying, there's something about ships and great bodies of water that stirs the soul. I couldn't agree more. What a way to start it off.
There's just something about when you see a ship, especially a huge ship on water, moving. It's going fast, but it's moving so elegantly, so slowly. It just calls to you. There's just something that calls, that pulls you.
And Duluth, you know, I don't know. When I read your article, I had to kind of flash back on all of this because there's so much history there, and one just tends to, you know, you hear the name, but do you really pay attention? And you sure bring that to light in this article.
Well, you know, it was such, when you look 100 years ago, 150 years ago, there was something like 6,000 sailing ships on the Great Lakes. I mean, that's a huge amount of ships.
Yeah, amazing.
And Duluth was the anchor. I mean, they came, there was iron ore, there was coal, transporting it for the Midwest. It was a very vibrant community of a seafaring community.
And it was interesting that that they were called salties and Lakers. But those that were going in the ocean were called salties, and the ones in the lake were called Lakers.
And they still call them that.
Even today. Oh, amazing. Great stuff. And so then the Duluth Harbor, you know, is just off of what? Lake Superior, right?
Right. Lake Superior is the lake that it's on.
Right. And the two cities are side by side.
Yeah, Wisconsin on the one, and then the Duluth right butted up right beside it.
Right, and then of course it's the what is it? The world's longest island waterway, I think, as you say.
The St. Lawrence Seaway is the longest, and it goes right into the middle of North America. I mean,
right.
Going from the Atlantic Ocean right into the middle of North America.
Which you refer to as the Great Lakes Seaway.
Yes, St. Lawrence Seaway, but it's the Great Lakes Seaway. And Lake Superior is actually the world's largest freshwater lake in the world.
Now, if you will, walk our audience through from the time you arrived at the Duluth Canal, because I think it's really, you really hit it right on the head, the feeling that you got when you arrived there.
Well, you go and you see ships sailing, but it's really quite amazing to go stand on a pier, and you can walk right to the lighthouse, and it's not just some tourist attraction. This is a working ship canal.
Right.
And you see these huge ships just coming towards you and maneuvering into this small, tentatively small when you look at how huge they are, narrow channel. And then they go on. The aerial lift bridge is lifted up to allow them to go into the harbor. So, and you're standing right there beside them. It is just an amazing feeling. It's it brings you back somehow years and years to where it's an era that just seems to be gone, but it's alive down there, and it's really exciting to be down there.
And, of course, you mentioned in your article that just moments before you arrived at the Duluth Canal, the 767-foot Laker Arthur M. Anderson, which was built in, as you say, in 1952, had passed through. And, of course, there's a lot of history behind that.
Well, the Arthur Anderson was the ship that paralleled the journey of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Right.
It was the two ships that together went across Lake Superior during that horrific storm, November 10th, where the Fitzgerald went down November 10th, 1975. And the Captain Cooper was the last one to speak to the Captain McSorley of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yeah, and as I understand it from my history, is that the Edmund Fitzgerald had lost its radar, or both its radar, so they really didn't have any navigation ability. And as you say, the storm hit, and then the Arthur Anderson was leading them into port, and either the Fitzgerald went aground on a reef. Well, I don't know if there'd be a reef, but some kind of a low point in the lake, and obviously it was sunk, and without any reports, which was the amazing thing.
It happened very quickly. There are still controversy as to what exactly caused the flooding on the Edmund Fitzgerald. it was listing as it, from a Caribou Island where they feel it may have shelled, and which would rip a hole into the hull. Some say the hull was already very defective, and maybe that's it, in the storm it just buckled. The Edmund Fitzgerald did lose its radar in the storm, and the Anderson, which was behind the Fitzgerald, was guiding it through the storm and trying to get to the refuge of Whitefish Bay. It was about an hour and a half away from Whitefish Bay when it sunk.
And what's amazing, of course, is that they didn't have any reports from anyone on the Edmund Fitzgerald, and probably because they probably lost their radio as well as the other, you know, electronics on the ship. And I think when they finally dove down on it, the ship was broken in half, and there was a lot of, as you say, different speculation. And one was that these ports were open and water had gotten into the hold, and the ship just went down. But unfortunately, we'll never really know.
No, and yes, and that's where the controversy is. You have some that say no, that wouldn't have caused it. The hatches were not properly done. It's so much controversy on it, and the reports about not having a mayday before it sunk. It happened quickly, perhaps, but also there, you know, the sea captains don't announce on the radio if they have a real problem, because then if you make it, then it looks bad when you you know, you panicked ahead of time. So they may have known what was happening, but they weren't about to broadcast in the public radio.
And I don't know, but when we think of lakes, I guess we think of lakes in a different light, and we don't think of these wicked November storms, which obviously come up on Lake Superior. And we think of lakes as a calm body of water, but obviously that's certainly not the case.
No, and Lake Superior is often said to be even more wicked than if you were on the ocean. The storms are much more wicked; they're much more intense than they are in the ocean, where the water has a longer area to the wave to keep on going, where you don't have that on Lake Superior. They're ferocious, and they come up very quickly.
You quote Gordon Lightfoot in your article.
That is probably the reason that everyone knows about the Edmund Fitzgerald. That came out about a year after the Fitzgerald had gone down. And if the song hadn't brought and kept going the memory, we might have all forgotten about the Fitzgerald, and in that way have not even remembered some of the other shipwrecks, some of the other tragedies that have happened on the lakes. So it was really his song that has embedded that in our minds.
Yeah, the legend lives on from Chippewa on down of the big lake they call Gitche Gumee.
Gitche Gumee, yeah. Beautiful, haunting ballad. It just stirs the soul. Just every time you hear it, you just have to stop and listen.
Yeah, exactly. You say that while the canal has been there for well over a century, the old canal district is now new. Tell us about that.
Well, it's an exciting place. I didn't expect it to be as vibrant as I did. I mean, I was going to see the museum and the Great Lakes Aquarium, and I was so pleasantly surprised. I mean, you can walk along the streets. There's all these nice little shops. There's these, and not necessarily all big name shops. There's one antique store. One store has just mariner kind of things, like the maritime stuff about boats and about all kinds of stuff, books and that. And there's a little art galleries. It is really, you could spend the whole day just walking up and down and looking at these stores. And the food is good. They're nice, quaint little cafes. I was really, really pleasantly surprised.
And so there, you know, there's some museums, restaurants, and quaint shops, as you say.
Yeah, and they've taken an old section, which, I mean, we've been going to Duluth for a long time, and that was, you know, way back in time when you went just about every second weekend to go shopping.
It was old abandoned warehouses and junkyards.
Oh, you'd never walk down there.
Yeah.
But they, in the 80s, they just completely refurnished it. They converted it into a wonderful place.
Tell us, first of all, you stopped at the Lake Superior Maritime Visitor Center, and which is, you say, located next to the aerial lift bridge. And then you went on to this marine biology aquarium, it is, right?
Yeah, Great Lakes Aquarium.
Great Lakes Aquarium. Tell us about that, because there's some fascinating things that go on in there.
Well, you know, it's I had heard about it, and it's about 5 or 6 years old now. And, you know, I've lived most of my life on the shores of Lake Superior.
Right.
And really have perhaps not known about as much about it as I should. And when I talked to a friend of mine who's a news anchor, television news anchor internationally, and he asked him what's sort of the hot button issue in the future, and that he hears about, and he says water is going to be more important than oil in the future. So the opportunity to see the Great Lakes Aquarium, where they're going to talk about water, about the fresh water, just about the whole area, was fascinating. I thought, well, I've got to learn about this. And I was just blown away by how great a place it was. It makes learning fun. I mean, things like putting all an exhibit for children and for adults too, like me.
Mm-hmm.
Putting all the if you put all the water in the world in 100 buckets, 3 of those buckets would be fresh water, and out of those 3, 75% is frozen in ice caps, 22% underground, and 3% surface water. And it really brings home how valuable fresh water is. But it's done in such a fun way. I mean, here's these buckets, and only 3 that are in blue
right.
are fresh water.
Yeah, good
and
point.
And that's kind
yeah.
of fun to learn that way.
Exactly. And then you say they have these massive tanks containing 120,000 gallons of water and over 70 species of fish.
And that is, they've done it so well. The biggest one is the one to do, it's like a slice of, taking a slice of habitat. Is Isle Royale, and they have it in 3 tanks, one as it is now, and it's got all kinds of fish in it, one as it was 150 years ago, only with natural fish natural to Lake Superior, and the one that has smaller fish in it. But it's done so that you're looking and you really feel as if you're in some kind of a boat that you're just looking in on. And in some of them, they have actually the birds as well, so the birds are walking around on the shore as well. And it's really done very well. I mean, you really feel like you're peeking in to a habitat. You're peeking into a very alive area.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And the article for our listeners is up on our website. So if you want to read it more in depth, you can go to ttrn.com and go to Rediscovering America. But before we go,
mm-hmm.
I have one question. How
mm-hmm.
can a trout eat a tree?
Well, that was, you kind of think it doesn't go together. Well, you take, as they explained it there, and get your interest, insects eat trees. And they take that energy from the tree and transfer that plant energy into bug energy. And then the bugs, of course, are in the water, and the trout eat the bugs. So, in essence, they have taken the tree and eaten the tree.
And there you go.
Fascinating. It was a wonderful way to explain it, and I can actually understand it.
Absolutely. And for more information, Elle points out that you can go to the Duluth Convention and Visitors Bureau website or Lake Superior Marine Museum, Great Lakes Floating Museum, and Great Lakes Aquarium. Elle, thanks very much. It's a fun and interesting article, and always a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much.
And bye for
Take
now.
Take care. Bye-bye.